Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Live coast to coast, coming to you from deep inside your small intestine. We're all here with millions of microbes dancing around, loving the fact that you do your body good. Isn't that right, Mark?
Yeah, it's a big rock show, disco, mosh pit in here.
It's a disco. It's like getting down, getting funky.
It's like microbes with like these big chains on there around their neck. Yeah, and bell
like
bottoms
out, and they're like doing like the car wash. Yeah, working at the car wash. Yeah,
that might be a little old for our audience. Or not.
Hey, if you don't know that song, you ain't living. Anyway, thanks for joining us. This is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know, and this is Healthy Gut Girl, and I'm with Mark Lobato, and he's in Long Island, and I'm in Venice Beach, California. So welcome. We have a cool subject today. We're talking about a poison called glyphosate, and we're talking about genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. And we've got nothing but good things to say about these two things, don't we, Mark?
No, absolutely. We should also tell our audience that this is our second attempt at this.
Why don't you tell?
Yeah, well, she's right. I have to talk about it because it is my fault.
Because shit happens.
Yeah.
Shit happens when you're deep inside the small intestine.
Yeah, you know, I was trying something new and I didn't have her audio on and recorded. We record, I think, over an hour of material. It was really, really good, but without her audio, only mine. So we're doing this again.
Well, nobody cares. But you know what? I'm glad we're doing it again because I got so mad, didn't I?
I went on a rant. Yeah,
I went on a rant and I said some bad words and Mark said the F word. And
multiple
we
times.
We were pissed. I can't do that again. I'll just make too many enemies.
Yeah, right. No, it doesn't serve the topic of conversation.
Greater good.
Yeah, going off on a rant. Good.
You know, it's good once in a while to blow some steam off and blow your top, which is what I did. You just don't want thousands of people listening to you when you do.
True. So what's with GMOs? Why are we talking about this? I mean, I shouldn't ask you why. What did you want to get across? What did you want to talk about?
I wanted to talk about it because it keeps coming up in almost every subject. Every time I have a conversation, every time I do a podcast, every time I have a client, every time I order food, it comes up almost every day now. And, you know, there's something that we as human beings have to endure in this day and age that they didn't have to endure 5,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, I would even say 50 years ago. And they had to deal with it 15 years ago, but just not as much, which is our toxic burden, right? I talk about, you hear me say that word all the time, our toxic load, our toxic burden. I mean, human beings just have a level of toxicity that they have to deal with. But today we have a toxic burden that is unprecedented to our knowledge. And most of these toxins, so one of the primary ways we get a toxic burden, contaminant is from our air, right? The cars, pollution, help me out here, motorcycles, factories, boats, you know, exhaust from anything that takes petrol, anything that takes fuel.
Environmental
toxicity, chemicals that are put into our air, chemicals that don't get cleaned out of our water because they're not able to get, when they go through the water reclamation plan and they end up in our water anyway because they're so tiny, like pharmaceutical medication residue, things like that. So there's a bunch of different toxic burdens that we all have to live with. But one of the most prevalent and one that's saturating our lives is glyphosate. That is a chemical that is in pesticides that is also used in Roundup Ready, which is a weed killer that is found in a Monsanto product, called Roundup Ready. What else is it in? Do you know does Dow use it or any other one of those any one of those fantastic companies that helps us further our agriculture endeavors?
I don't know off the top of my head. That's a good question. But you say Roundup Ready. Now, obviously, this is something that is used predominantly in the agricultural industry as a primary pesticide, a weed killer.
Yeah.
That is the big
one. You can just go into Home Depot and buy it, or into any hardware store, gardening store, and buy any one of Monsanto chemicals or chemical products. And it's one of the primary pesticides used to kill weeds. It was discovered in 1960. It was used to descale pipes, like from metal piping. They would use this glyphosate chemical to descale. So, you know, when you get water build up on pipes,
yes,
it would descale it and remove those deposits and resins off the pipes. And Monsanto was like, hey, this is a cool chemical, because they're in the business of chemicals. And around 1970 or so, Monsanto acquired it, and they discovered that not only does it descale things, well, what does that mean? It removes the mineral deposits off of pipes. Mm. Well, it removes the minerals out of plants. It strips the mineral content out of plants and kills it. So it was doing that to the weeds. And they're like, hey, if you spray this on a weed, it'll kill it. That's awesome. But it also killed the crop, right? So you spray it on your grass and it would kill the grass and the weed. So enter screen right or stage left, enter GMOs, genetically modified organisms. And they are able to hybridize or splice the genetic material of a plant and make it so that it can withstand and resist the chemical glyphosate or whatever chemical they put on it. So now you've got this amazing chemical that can kill the weeds around the crop and that are trying to destroy the crop, kill the weed, but the plant lives. How handy is that? Mm. Doesn't that sound amazing?
Well, to a farmer, that's exactly what you want. You want your crops to flourish while the weeds don't take over.
Yeah, it makes rational sense, right? Let's save our crops. Let's kill the weeds. The problem is that, they never did long-term testing on human beings with what these genetically modified crops would do to a human body over time. They never tested that, never. So they put this stuff out on to the market, and we became the guinea pigs.
Now, these are two separate. Are these two separate things, or one and the same? When you say
no, GMO and glyphosate. Yeah, right. They're two different things.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But they kind of go
you
hand in hand.
You can't have one without the other.
Right. And recently, since you just went over the GMOs, I did want to say that you know this, that there have been recent news that they're showing that cancer has been associated with glyphosate, and California looks like they're trying to require Monsanto or the labeling of Roundup to have a warning label on their product.
Yeah, they want to sue them for this. This is really good news in the right direction. I'm so excited for this because the movement is happening. And, you know, this study that you're talking about, they've been doing these studies across Europe and across many different parts of the world. They've been doing these studies and they've never done them here. So, you know, they've been linking glyphosate to autism, cancer, bowel disease, obesity, behavioral disorders, ADHD, you name it. They've been linking this in every other country practically, but here. Why? Because Monsanto is in bed with our political system. They're in bed. They're bedfellows with our politicians. One of the biggest lobbyists in the world is the pharmaceutical lobby and the chemical lobby. So
petrochemical, big agro.
These are the biggest lobbyists. That means these people are lining the pockets of our politicians. I don't care how much you like them. There's only one person I know of who doesn't buy into that, and that's Ron Paul. Every single other politician is in bit. Hillary Clinton, George Bush, both of them, Bill Clinton, you name it. Donald Trump probably is going to go that direction. You can't be a billionaire and not be in bed with two of the biggest companies in the world.
You just named another assault on the body, not just environmental. It's political. This is a political, assault on our food freedom and or you know, living organic life, eating good food. We have so many stresses.
Donald Trump's tweets are an assault on their on their health. I love them, but I know that a lot of people would consider that a physical assault.
I kind of think like tweeting is like secondhand smoke. It's like secondhand opinions, man. They are just caustic.
I dig it, man. When have we ever in the history of man have we ever been able to hear exactly what our president is thinking live, real time? I mean, unedited, unabashedly, like, bleh, here it is. I think it's great. I think they should all be required to do that.
I don't know. That's a whole nother discussion.
I try not to bring up subjects like that, but, you know, you just trip and fall in it like a little pile of dog shit sometimes.
That's exactly what some of those tweets are. They're just little droppings along the virtual highway.
I like them. Okay, anyway, they're like my tweets. I mean, you know, speaking of this, okay, can I just tell you?
Oh, no.
I was so mad today. Listen to this. I posted my, Sam, my girlfriend Sam, she posted the funniest, I think it was her, she posted the funniest thing to my Instagram privately, which was this cat playing with this French bulldog's testicles. Like he was boxing them. He was lying underneath him and he was like boxing his
like little baby in a crib just dangling.
And then they had like sound effects of like someone hitting a punching bag.
Okay.
It was, or like Street Fighter punches, you know, it was, I was in tears and I'm like, should I post this? It's a little bit dog porny. Like, I don't know if I should. And I posted it anyway. I shared it. Dude, that post on my IG, on Kitty Martone IG, got 400 views in a couple of hours. You know, I just posted like 4 DIY home remedy, skincare, health technique, taking care of yourself, non-chemical, non-hormone disrupting, amazing informative videos over the last few days. 150 views.
Right.
400 views this thing got in 2 hours of a cat punching a dog's balls. Lord help us all.
Well, laughter is part of your health regimen. It has to be. You have to laugh, man. That releases good chemicals in your body.
I was like, every week I'm going to have to post like some dog porn stuff or something.
I think like, we should do a lot more like cats and playing with dog testicles as our part of our DIY.
I know. I have a lot of video of Frodo when he was alive humping Gonzalez, our cat. I mean, you could watch that for days. It's the funniest thing you've ever seen. And it's like a win-win. They're both enjoying it. It was like, you know, what you don't want to stop them. Anyway, okay, moving on.
Yeah, moving back to GMOs. Back to GMOs, folks.
So going back to the fact that every other country, civilized nation, has done these tests on glyphosate, except America. But we're finally catching up. We're coming. We're showing up to the game late, but we're showing up. And
now we're seeing the results of what overexposure to glyphosate is creating. So there's cancer. Yeah. And obviously Monsanto is denying that they actually even pose any risk. Go figure.
Yeah, Monsanto says that you urinate the particulates out. That you urinate the particulates out of the glyphosate, of the pesticides, and that it's not bioaccumulative. But it very much is. In fact, they found 1,400 times the allowable rate of glyphosate in breast milk in women in like, I don't know, it was something like 150 samples of breast milk in, I don't know, it was in America. It was like Germany or England. I forget where it was. I actually think I have the study here. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. But so 1,400 times the allowable, like any pesticide should be allowed in babies in breast milk, let alone 1,400 times the allowable rate. Here's this crazy study. Concentrations of glyphosate in breast milk at 760 to 1,600 times higher than pesticide limits set by European drinking water directives. Okay, that's what that says. In a small pilot study, 35 urine samples and 21 drinking water samples from across the U.S. were measured. The results were compared with an EU study conducted by Friends of the Earth in 2013. The urine samples of Americans were at least 10 times more contaminated with glyphosate than Europeans. Bum, bum, bum. Hmm. It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
So backing up just a hair, talking about Monsanto using glyphosate. Also, they found out that it was a desiccant, so it actually dries up the product or the whatever they're using it on, which makes it easier to harvest. So they were like, wow, now we can yield more and we can also harvest it quicker and save a lot more money.
Why? Because when it goes through the machinery, it just kind of goes quicker.
Yeah. So imagine like trying to pick a rose with your bare hands that's beautiful and fresh and alive, and then trying to pick it when it's dried up
right.
and falls.
It's just more brittle and
falls right into your hand, right? Which is, I guess, the idea when you're harvesting something like wheat. Or cotton, I would imagine, things like that. So isn't that crazy? So then it took Monsanto 7 years to get a patent from between 2003 and 2010 to get a patent for glyphosate because it was so resisted by so many of the politicians. They were like, wow, the science here in front of our faces is showing that this stuff is sketch. And it got through anyway. How about that? How about that? So let's see. What else do I know about the history of glyphosate?
I'm looking on Wikipedia, and there's a whole bunch here. And you can certainly look it up and read about it.
So as a drug, as a chemical, it is classified as an antibiotic. So this is where we get into the endocrine disruption, the hormone disruption, the gut disruption, it disturbs your bio pathways of the microbes in your gut so that they are not able to function normally. It kills them. In fact, there was another study that said one bowl of Cheerios, the old GMO type Cheerios with the glyphosate, which by the way, they might be non-GMO now, but they're not organic. So they still use glyphosate in the wheat of Cheerios. One bowl of Cheerios can destroy your gut bacteria.
Wow. Wow. And I ate so much Cheerios when I was growing up a lot.
Me too. So here's something else that's weird. So they said, okay, yeah, you know, they got the patent and they said, yeah, glyphosate is fantastic. It's great. They showed them their biased studies, right? And they said, okay, great. You know, yeah, we can go ahead and unleash this chemical on the planet and on Americans. And then they added something called Advance. I think that's how you say it. Advance. So they never approved that. Maybe Advance on its own in and of itself has been approved and the glyphosate in and of itself. But when you combine the two, they become 1,000 times more toxic glyphosate becomes because of Advance. So this goes on a lot in the biochemical world, in the pharmaceutical world. Pharmaceuticals are a lot more strict in some ways, but like with vaccinations.
Because they're tested on humans, that's right.
Yeah. For the vaccinations, for example, you know, they might be able to, do studies and independent study. Well, no, vaccines have never had independent studies. Never mind. They've all been backed by Big Pharma. But anyway, so in and of itself, the measles vaccine might have really good results. The mumps vaccine might have its own separate results. Rubella will have its own. But you put them together, and those were never tested together. You put those together and you give them to an infant that's under the age of 6 months old. We don't know what that's going to do. We don't know what that's going to do long term. And that's what's going on. So stuff like glyphosate mixed with Advance. Hey, let's just make this cocktail of drugs and chemicals and they aren't approved. They aren't. We don't know what's going to happen.
And a baby that just got all of their his or her shots is suckling on a mom's teat and having glyphosate mammalian
milk. Cocktail. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is just the norm now. This is what's happening. And, you know, I finally picked a really good person to do a vaccine podcast with, and it's Rachel Lazenby. So we're planning on doing that. Maybe you can join us. She's very knowledgeable, and I can't wait till she drops the bombs on us. She's so good and so educated on this subject. But basically talking about the role glutathione plays in our body. Glutathione is an antioxidant that our liver mostly produces that helps defend us from things like this, helps defend us from chemicals, heavy metals, the heavy metals that come from car pollution and air pollution and metals that are in the flu vaccine and the different vaccinations and what happens to our bodies when we don't have enough glutathione and what types of things thwart the production of that. So this is our defense. Our defense is something like glutathione that's going to help combat glyphosate and different pesticides in our food, but it's in such high demand in our body. It's like gold. It's like HCL. It's like hydrochloric acid in our stomach. We eat so much cooked food and we're so stressed out and we take so many medications and we have so much toxic, you know, downloads from all around us that HCL and glutathione are so taxed.
Short supply.
Kind of like the
discussion you had on minerals and how our body is in such huge depletion because it's being used to digest and absorb a lot of the toxic metals and whatnot.
Yeah, which is why, you know, which is the argument for supplementation, because, you know, how can we keep up with the toxic burdens of life, you know? I mean, yeah, naturally, I love to get into conversations with people who think we shouldn't supplement. It's not necessary. We can get it from our food and blah, blah, blah. Hey, I agree with you, man. But how can you when our food doesn't have it? How can you?
I remember from the 1980s just reading articles that our soil from agriculture is minerally depleted. And that's why they have to add all the potash and serious amount of fertilizers to remineralize the soil.
Yeah. And now they're using NPK fertilizers, which aren't even natural fertilizers. And these NPK fertilizers, will you look that up? Because my
MPK,
N is in Nancy, N is in Nancy, P is in Paul, K is in Kitty Martone.
NPK.
NPK fertilizers. Anyway, they're so toxic, you know, and you can use NPK fertilizers on your organic food. You know, it's okay. It's not part of the organic standards, at least not in America, that I'm aware of.
Okay. I mean, there's stuff here on it.
Okay. Well, I'll look for what I'm looking for while you talk.
My page isn't showing up right. Just there it is. It's primarily composed of three elements: nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Mm-hmm. No,
that sounds pretty natural to me.
That sounds normal. No, yeah. There's more to it. There's more to it.
There's an abnormal to it.
Is that abnormal?
Abnormal. So since I wanted to ask you so most people listening are going to go, okay, I get this argument and these problems and issues with all these chemicals. What plants or what crops are GMO created, Kat? What are primarily?
I you'd have to look it up, but I know for sure some of the top ones are beetroot,
sugarcane,
corn, cotton, soy, papaya, pineapple, alfalfa, wheat, potatoes. Now there's this Arctic apple that they're coming out with that doesn't need to be labeled. None of these things have to be labeled anymore.
Well, not here in the U.S. because we had that in California. There was an initiative on the ballot about 4 years ago to label GMO foods. And it was the the pro-GMO lobbying group spent so much money here to scare the populace. And they did. They made pretty much said that if you vote this in, your food is going to be more expensive. And people voted it down based on that insane logic.
Yeah, can you imagine? I don't want to know what's in my food because then my food will be too expensive. Let's take a minute with that one. I don't want to know. I'd just rather not know.
Right.
Thanks.
Did cigarette prices go up when they put labels on them? No, they just keep going up for other reasons, and it wasn't because they put labels on them.
Right. People, you know, for the people who want to know, we should know. We have that right. Maybe most people don't want to know, but I know my listeners want to know, and I know you want to know, and I want to know. So I think it's our right. I think it's a constitutional right to know and understand, you know, to be informed about our choices. I don't know. I call me crazy, but I care, you know?
Yes. So now, are GMO safe?
I don't want to be the guinea pig to find out, you know? What we do know is that celiac disease, the percentage of celiac disease now compared to, you know, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, the amount of allergies, you know, you can't even have peanuts on a plane now. Peanuts on a plane. Because
with Samuel Jackson.
Because I need more time. Anaphylaxis. Because you know, there's so many food allergies, peanut allergies, celiac disease, gluten intolerances, and people like to argue and say it's a fad. Who wants to be a fad? I just think that's the most ridiculous argument. It's a fad to be gluten intolerant.
Right.
I mean, who wants that? That's like saying, you know, it's a fad to have toe fungus. Like, who wants that? Nope. That's not fashionable. That's stupid.
You know, there's got to be this correlation between all of this and this onslaught of allergies and conditions.
Obesity, gut disease.
I hear it all the time. And I work in a restaurant too. And I hear people, I can't have this, I can't have that. You know, this just was unprecedented, it seems to me, at least 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah. And there was a McDonald's 20 years ago. There was Coca-Cola 20 years ago. There was garbage food at the supermarket. So it's not about just garbage food.
Right.
It's about the introduction and the onslaught of so many chemicals into our environment. And there is a lot of science outside of the US that does show that genetically modified foods are not good. First of all, one thing in particular is that once you patent a seed, like, who the hell said that it was okay of an idea for a company the size of Monsanto or any company to patent a seed? So first of all, you can see a million things wrong with that. You know, your seeds are the air is going to carry them into the next crop next door.
That's called fertilization. That's how it used to always happen.
Right. And that's how kind of it should happen. But this is happening now with patented seeds. And now people who are found growing any portion or percentage of Monsanto crops these seeds in their crops are being sued by Monsanto and shut down.
And
if nobody knows about this, this is old news. This has been happening for years now.
Right. Decades.
Can you think of the movie that it first came out in? It's a movie, I'll remember it in a minute. And it talks all about this. It talks all about this very subject where small farmers are being closed down because Monsanto is basically infesting and infecting America's agriculture with their seed.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought this up because this is the distinction to make with GMOs. And because I'm reading online, is it safe? Is it safe? And whether the science coming from the news is bit, you know, funded by these big companies, it's pretty much saying, no, they are safe. Genetically modified foods, well, they just don't have the long-term effects to know. But what comes into question is the corporations and their ethics involved and what they're doing, these farmers, and their business tactics, and again, trademarking something that's organic. So farmers have to buy seeds from Monsanto, pretty much, because that's on the books now. And I know that from a friend of mine who goes up to Nebraska, and his girlfriend's a farmer, father's a farmer, and he hangs out with all the farmers, and they all have to buy seeds at the end of the season. They can't just replant their own seeds because they're trademarked, which means they're genetically modified. So you come in, now you come into this whole other aspect of this business behind it that, man, it's evil and heinous, in my opinion. And I'm sure most of them, and that's what anti-GMO people pretty much are railing against. They may, like, I was just reading an article of a scientist saying, look, they're quite safe. And the people are like, we don't care if it's safe. It's just destroying our agriculture. It's destroying basically the small farmer. It's
right. So what you're saying is, it does, like, let's just hypothetically say in some perfect world that genetically modified foods are safe. Let's just say that.
Okay.
It's the ethics of the company of patenting a seed and forcing farmers to work under their rules and laws and trademarks and permits and regulations of this one company that happens to be extremely wealthy, forcing them to work in that way. And in infesting agricultural crops across the United States and other countries with seeds that have been genetically modified in a laboratory.
Right.
So see, that is a big deal because we don't know what the long-term effects are. We don't know what's going to happen if a seed that has been spliced with the DNA of a spider and then and a tomato together, and then that seed gets carried in the wind and all of a sudden it ends up in a different climate somewhere. And now you've got no way of knowing what all the different variables are when you do that. That's why you should test things to the nth degree, but they don't. And it's kind of like the Frankenfish, right? Like this salmon that they have that's genetically modified that is now unleashed on the planet. They say it's under farm-raised salmon and it's genetically modified. But who's to say that some disgruntled employee or some scientist who's trying to, you know, experiment on the planet hasn't taken one of these fish and just dumped him into the ocean and set him free? I mean, there goes our entire salmon crop.
The ecosystem infected. Is affected.
It's affected. And, you know, it is anyway by all kinds of other toxicity, but good Lord, use your brain. Like there's nothing reasonable or rational about that behavior at all.
Completely so, right. And there, the other argument that GMO produces, or GE, both GMO, genetically modified organisms, or genetically engineered, GE, they used to say that, well, it helps improve crop yields. And that was the big reason for it, to get more out of our crops, because we have a growing population, we have to feed people, and we're just not getting the yields. Well, the studies have shown for the last 20 years that the yields are not actually improved from it.
Right.
So the information coming from the companies, look, they just want to get their product. It's a way to corner a market and monopolize.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's another way of controlling the planet, really, not to get conspiratorial here, but it's another form of control. You know, you control the planet if you control the food.
Oh, man. Well, corporations want you to pay.
What's that sound?
What's that? Oh, that's my desk. I'm at a standing desk and I keep hitting it. It's a little high today. So, I mean, the corporations, if they could, they would patent air and charge you for it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And look, and in other countries, they've done this with water. They've charged people
for water.
Yeah, they've charged. And people said, screw you, you're gonna charge us for water? Well, they captured rainwater. And the state said, you can't do that. That's our water.
And yeah, that's happening across America in different places where you've got to get a permit to collect rainwater.
Yes. So this is why GMOs are bad. Yeah, they might show it might be safe for you to eat, but man, the ethics of these companies are doing more harm than anything else.
Right. It's terrible. Anyway, I don't want to experiment with it. I'm fully prepared to grow my own food. I have many times in the past, and I'm going to start again and just avoid knowingly and carefully and, you know, go in armed with knowledge and buying things that are of high quality as best we can. So this brings us back to that last podcast where we, the one that we, that you lost because we didn't record it, we got really, really mad. Both
of
us.
Are you
going
to rehash this? Because you're going to get mad, and we're going to.
I am, but I'm not
caught in a spider web here.
I am, but I'm not going to be mad about it.
I'm going to goad you. Here we go. Go ahead.
I'm going to be really sweet. Watch. I'm going to be really sweet. So I just came back from the UK, and I was like, oh my God, everything is so cheap over here. I was not expecting the food to be so inexpensive. It's not dirt cheap, you know, but compared to here.
Compared
you know,
to
like
LA.
Acquiring, you know, a pound of grass-fed, pasture-raised butter there is, you know, a £1.50. So like, you know, $2.20 or something. And here, a pound of Kerrygold is probably $12, $15 or something like that. Half a pound, I think, is $6, $7, depending on where you get it. And, you know, you can go to a place called Daylesford Market. I think that's how you say it in London, in the middle of London, in the city, where, you know, one of the highest costs of living in the world. And buy a quart of bone broth for $6-$7, or a pint of kefir, of goat's kefir or cow kefir for, you know, $4 or $5. You go to Air One Market and you try to get yourself a quart of kefir, you're going to pay about $15, at least $8. If you get a dozen eggs, you're going to pay about $7, $8, $9, $10, $12. You get the farmer's market, even farmer's market in Santa Monica, $10 for a dozen pasture raised eggs, $10.
That's insane.
Insane. And I was so shocked by that in London. I thought it was going to be a heck of a lot more expensive, and it wasn't. You know, cheese, bread, meat, everything. Even eating out, even going to dinner, you know, is like reasonable. You know, unless you go to a fancy restaurant, it's reasonable. You go out, and I remember sitting with my friends ordering food, and at the end, we even had a couple drinks. And at the end of it, it was something like, you know, $20 a person, $22 a person, and you don't even tip there. It's included in the service charge. I was like, hang on a second, something's wrong. You know, like what the heck? It's I don't know. I this is where I got really upset. I feel like
as far as I know, the UK I don't think has banned GMO foods just yet. Although they do have a lot of natural organic farmers, I would assume.
They do have a lot of natural organic farmers. And now they, you know, they don't have the same kind of standards there with, like here you need a certification to stamp your food as certified. And it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to acquire a certification, organic certification. I would imagine it's the same. The same goes for GMO, to stamp your product GMO free. Anyway, so I want to say, oh well, the cost of living, the price of rent on Abbot Kinney in Venice or on Venice Boulevard and in Venice is really, really high, and that's why they get away with charging these amounts. Or the state of California, all the permits you need and the licensing. I mean, California is regulated so badly. Mm-hmm. It's like hideous how badly California, especially small businesses. So I'd like to give them that bone as well and say, okay, well, they've got an overhead that's ridiculous, but more than London?
Well, you are, first of all, you're in Santa Monica, and Santa Monica pays the highest national minimum wage than anyone else. I think it's close to, what, 10, I think there, 950? And
it's more. I think it's like, I thought it was even over 10 at the
not
moment.
Not yet. I mean, it's in the process, but you do pay, and Santa Monica pays the highest national minimum wage, and Santa Monica alone has the highest sales taxes, 10%.
10.25.
Oh my God. So I remember living there. Yeah, it's very, they have a huge tax burden, and most people, rich people who have a lot of money go, I'm not living in California, just kicking my ass.
Yeah, right. Unless they have just like totally disposable income. It's just like, you know, if you worked your ever loving butt to, you know, have a small business like Charlie and I, you know, going to Air One and doing your proper shop there, like buying your groceries for the week is not feasible. It's not. I can't do it. We can't do it. We do buy very high quality food, and I alternate. I'll go to Costco one week and buy a dozen eggs there. And then the next week I'll go to farmer's market. And then the next week, you know, so I try to offset the cost, but I can't imagine people with children and you know, trying
working
to
two jobs and yeah, right. With children, two jobs and a busy schedule, and they're stopping at McDonald's three times a week.
They're even just going to Ralph's or Pavilions or whatever and buying their food there, but they can't afford to, you know, to get really high quality food. And that is, you know, the difference between a pound of grass fed ground beef at $12.99 and commercial beef at $5.99 or $6.99, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, I didn't get all irate, did I?
No, because I didn't say...
You didn't let me?
Well, I could have said... Yeah, I didn't quite say the word that would have ticked you off.
Say it.
They're all posers. LA's posers. That's the one. They're posing this idea that we're all healthy, but they're charging you a premium for it because people just want to say, I'm buying organic.
Yeah. Look, I go to Whole Foods.
Don't do it. Don't go down that
Half
road.
The stuff at Whole, you know, the entire, here I go, the entire food bar at Whole Foods, they use canola oil. Okay. Whole
Huge,
Foods.
Huge. And that's one of the largest GMO crops.
GMO crops. Canola. And, you know, I love to say it. Canola oil is really good if you're a wooden desk. It's like fantastic if you're a piece of wood. It's horrible for you.
What
it's
do you mean,
horrible
like the buffet, the salad bar? You're talking about?
All of anything. If you go to their hot food bar
and read the
or
ingredients.
Anything that they prepare,
yeah.
Like, you know, the curries and the chickens and the pizza and the all the stuff, the pastas, everything they make that's pre-made and hot. Is made with canola oil. And I just find it shocking that a company that is supposed to talk about posing, they're coming forward with this, like, we are here to be the difference. We're here to make the difference. We're here to show you, you know, healthy food. I'm not saying they need to take care of us and babysit us, but if you come forward with a name like Whole Foods, come on, you better be serving Whole Foods. And you can't have a canola oil in your product and call that a whole food.
Well, don't you think, like, is canola oil that bad? I mean, if you're having it in your diet, like, yes, we can talk about the toxic load of everything, the accumulation. But, I mean, is it okay to have it once in a while? Look, you're going in Whole Foods, you're having an organic meal with canola oil.
You can have a Snicker bar once in a while. You can have
never. Never.
You can have whatever you want once in a while. You can get drunk once in a while. You can get In-N-Out Burger once in a while. You can do whatever you want
French
once in
fries,
a while.
Come on.
But, you know, people go to Whole Foods and get their lunch there every day. People buy grocery. I grocery stop shop there. Grocery stop. I'm going to stop shopping
And here's the thing, Kat. Your options are limited unless you have a farm and growing your own vegetables. Because the proliferation of all of these genetically modified foods is getting harder to avoid unless you are doing cultured veggies where you can, you know, alter the food and make it healthier. But beyond that, you are under a lot of pressure to buy what's in front of you.
We, you know, that's why we're here. That's why what our mission is to try to teach people things that we have learned and learn from people, new ways and ideas. We don't want to just complain and bitch and moan. We want to present a problem and give you some solutions and some ideas. And, you know, it's called Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. So the idea behind that is the concept that, you know, most conventional, not just doctors, but, you know, the conventional average Joe walking down the street doesn't know this stuff. So it's stuff that you should know. So now you know if you didn't know that canola oil is bad for you. So it comes from the rape seed, not the grape, but the rape seed, right? But the reason it's called
a rape
canola
seed,
oil,
it's raping your body of all those minerals.
Yeah,
and
it's raping your gut microbiome. So listen, is because it's made in Canada, canola oil, and it's genetically modified crop that's made in Canada. I think there are some forms of canola that are not GMO now. I think
predominantly the biggest crop, canola.
But
and
still,
corn,
it's also an extracted oil. It's a refined oil, really refined oil that's not good for your liver. It's very congesting. There's nothing good about it. You know, if you're going to do fat, do ghee. If you're going to do oil, do
coconut oil, macadamia nut oil.
Do avocado oil, stuff like that. But, you know, easy on the oil anyway, folks. Like, you know, the second you extract an oil from its source, it oxidizes. The minute you remove that oil from an olive, from an avocado, from a coconut, from a pumpkin, the minute you remove that oil, it oxidizes. Once it's oxidized, it slowly becomes carcinogenic. The liver has a very difficult time processing it, handling it. It congests the liver, which is why it's better to get your fat from the food that still maintains its source, like a whole olive, a whole piece of fish, a piece of coconut meat.
Avocado.
The saturated fats are a little bit better. They're harder to damage. Saturated fats like ghee and like coconut oil, they're harder to damage because they are such big molecules. That's why you sit some ghee on the counter and it doesn't melt. You sit coconut oil, it takes a long time for it to go liquid, right? Because it's just harder to damage. They're bigger molecules. And so those are better fats. But the refined oils, like the olive oils, even if it doesn't say refined on it, just what I mean is extracted and it's removed from its mother, it's all of a sudden, it's just a lesser quality food for your liver to deal with. So, you know, those are ways we can mitigate some of the damage done. We can take a high quality glutathione, like a liposomal glutathione that's really absorbable that will help us cleanse our livers out. We can culture and ferment foods to help increase the nutritional quality. There's a lot of research that has come out that shows that you could take a commercial cabbage, not an organic one, but a commercial one, and you can ferment it. And the fermenting process, the bacteria will actually reduce the amount of chemical damage to the food product and increase the nutritional value. So now you're eating commercial food, but you've increased the nutritional quality and reduced the toxicity level. So we can grow things like herbs and tomatoes. Those are easy things to grow ourselves, you know, lettuces and kale, things like that. Very easy to grow, and container gardens, you know, so you don't have to have a big yard to do those things, just a lot of sun. Anyway, yeah, so there's a lot of ways that we can mitigate the toxic burden that we're all having to endure. Mm-hmm. Air filter, really high quality air filter in your house. I get so depressed about this one because of where I live, you know, living in Los Angeles, living on a busy street, busy intersection. And I just feel like, you know, how much can I help myself? How much can I help my husband? You know, how can I help? Is it an uphill battle? You know, like anyway,
when you live in a very, very busy city, you're exposed to all of these toxins at a greater extent than most other people who live in the middle.
Yeah. You know, I also wanted to talk about supplements one more time again. You know, I don't feel like we should have to take supplements. I don't feel like we should have to supplement progesterone cream. I don't feel like we should have to do coffee enemas and liver flushes and fasting and water fasting and lemonade diets. And I don't feel like we should have to drink a quart of green juice every day to stay, you know, I don't feel like it is a natural thing for us. But again, I also feel like, I believe that because of what we're up against, we have to take extreme measures to combat that. And so because of that, we don't have much of a choice. Having said that, I am more and more starting to come to the conclusion that we should not isolate our nutrients. I had this education many, 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 many years ago, and then I steered away from it and listened to lots of other podcasts and experts and research and people, and started isolating my nutrients, isolating magnesium, isolating zinc, isolating fats, things like that, fatty acids and things. I'm taking DHA, but not EPA, all these different types of isolation of nutrients. And I've never felt like that was a good idea. Never. And more in my practice and in my reading and on my Facebook group, I'm seeing that it's a problem. It's a problem. If you just take magnesium, no matter how high quality it is, you just take it by itself, and you don't take it with its cofactors, and you don't take it the way the body would normally recognize it, in a piece of kale or in a pumpkin seed. The body recognizes food. It's innately designed to salivate when it sees something that it knows it can have. So you look at a pumpkin seed and you chew it and you salivate, and the secretions from your mouth tell the brain certain things about what you're about to swallow and what's going to happen in the gut and how you're going to absorb the nutrients and break it all down. But if you just take an isolated nutrient, the body, I'm not saying it doesn't. I just think it has a harder time utilizing it. I think it's like, that's weird. Like, looks kind of like a pumpkin seed magnesium combination thing, but it's not. You know what I mean? Did I lose you?
No, I'm listening intently. I have questions for you.
Okay, cool. So I am a canary in the coal mine, as we all know. And so I know, I see it in my own body. I see when I isolate a nutrient because someone, some expert who I respect dearly, and I'm not talking about one person in particular, this happens to me all the time, and I do that thing, and then I have some kind of wacky reaction. And then I'm like, you know what? I know that magnesium or that zinc or that whatever it was really expensive, and it was the best one known to, the nutraceutical industry, blah, 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 blah. But my body's not assimilating it. Something's not right. So I'm a huge proponent of using supplements that are in whole food form. I found this vitamin C called Wild Force, and it's acerola berry, pine needle, camu camu. It's like all these intense, like the highest forms of vitamin C that you can possibly find in nature, in particular foods, concentrated into a powder. And when I drink that, I swear to you, I can hold the bottle and I feel like there's some energy happening. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm glad you brought the whole idea of energy up, because when you, with your experience with QRA, you were also doing the same thing with individual supplements to people's bodies. And yeah, you were discovering that the body likes certain supplements, obviously together or singular. So how would you then comment on sort of that?
I'm not going to badmouth my education in the area of QRA. I think it's very useful and helpful, and I still use it a lot. But in terms of isolating nutrients, I mean, you know, at the end of a QRA session, you're muscle testing every organ and gland, and you're putting nutrients into that person's field for every organ and gland. So at the end of the session, you've got an entire program of supplementation with its cofactors and its, all these different things within the biochemical puzzle you've just put together. But I will say, in Dr. Marshall, in Premier Research Labs products, all of those are, if they're not whole food supplements, mm-hmm. they are in a nanobacterial form. So they actually have a probiotic form, which makes a huge difference because it's instantly absorbed into the body. But even some of those products I can't do well with. You know, his magnesium form is like, you know, it's actually all of his products are a whole food form. Nothing is, you know, you can't just go and take something from Premier Research Labs that isn't multiple herbs combined. Food. It's food. So, I had to go off in that direction because it didn't have a ton to do with GMOs and pesticides.
But you did come up, you did open up a subject of supplementation, and now with our listeners, and I guess you can pretty much say, Kat, you would have to agree, is that everyone's different, obviously. Everyone's bodies would react 100%. Differently to the magnesium you took and didn't take. It's, again, finding a whole food supplementation.
It's my first choice. But obviously, I mean, there's people who thrive on taking a zinc and, a magnesium and a calcium and, manganese and a boron and a taurine. And, you know,
I'm taking my magnesium threonate right now.
Threonate.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So yeah, you know, that's like, everybody's different. We're all different puzzles and we have to figure out what each individual, our individual body needs and does well with and prefers. I always go back to old school, you know, old school nourishment.
Yeah, try to get it from your food, mostly, obviously. And I would love to just get it from my food.
You know, I thought of something back in the day when I was studying, talking about food and the story. You know, there's this meter. It's called a Brix meter. I think we've talked about this before. It's called a Brix meter, and it measures the antioxidant quality in food, in produce. And yeah, we have talked about this. And when you, because I was talking about how peaches from 1950, in order to get the same amount of antioxidants today, you have to eat 52 peaches from one peach from 1950. Well, the Brix meter can measure how, I want to say strong, how nutritionally dense. What's going on over here? Knock, knock. How nutritionally dense something is with this Brix meter. And it tells you, you know, how fresh and wonderful your produce is. And it's very difficult to find good Brix meter readings from our food today. It's very scary. It's a depressing subject, but like I said, you know, you can do, there's things you can do. Grow your own food for one.
Ferment your
Shop
own
at farmers fruits. Market.
Did we ever talk about, can you ferment fruits?
Yes.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah.
You can ferment just about anything.
And ferment, that would increase the bioavailability and strength of the food. And it's not like it's increasing. What did you say? What did you laugh at? I missed that.
I said, you can ferment anything. Basically, you're just spoiling food. Leave that on, please. Perfect. Okay. Go on.
So when you're, and this is just a question, I can't leave this on and talk.
I could take you seriously for one.
So I'm wearing,
for those who are listening, he's wearing a red clown nose.
That's why I'm going to sound a little nasally. So when you're fermenting the veggies, it's not like you're getting more vitamin A, C, D, and E. It's really the microbiome is increasing, right? That's where the nutrition.
No.
Like you get more vitamin A. How could you create more? Oh, really?
So here's what happens. So you actually put, you ferment, let's say carrots, that has vitamin A in it. You ferment the carrot and the bacteria eat the sugars, eat some of the plant matter, and they then poop out. They've got a waste product from what they've just eaten. And some miraculous way, that waste product increases the quality, the nutritional value of the food. It enhances the nutritional value.
It's like a unicorn. They're pooping ice cream, you know?
Yeah. They're amazing. Wow. They're amazing. They're amazing.
Okay.
So there you go. Well, this was a lot more calm of a podcast than the one that that you broke.
I got so angry. We really railed on Whole Foods and the whole poser culture in LA. Amazing.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I'm part of it. I was just at Air One having lunch in my yoga pants. So who am I to complain? You know what I mean? It's like, that's rich. You know, I'm sitting here getting mad at the posers, and there I am in yoga pants in Air One having a nut butter blast smoothie. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I used to eat lunch almost every day. I'd go to the Whole Foods and have lunch because it was just so easy to go to that snack bar, and I was able to get it where it was like $10, $11 sometimes. And, you know, it's just easier than cooking, and I was getting better food, I would think, in most regards.
Well, Air One's hot bar is really, really healthy. They don't use canola oil, and almost everything they have and use is organic, and they really do a good job.
Right.
But it is very, very expensive. It is very difficult for me to go in there. You know, I'll go in there for one or two things, but, you know, if I find myself having to buy four or five items, it's painful. It's painful.
Yeah, I agree. So everyone, buy anything that says organic on it as much as you can. Obviously, everyone knows this. And vote with your money, where you spend your money. If you don't want genetically modified foods, don't buy it. And that industry should, hopefully, would wean. So it's up away. I doubt
it. It'll catch up. They're going to catch up. But hopefully, by the time they do and it's more regulated, it won't have already complete. I actually read it that it's too late. And I don't know how true that is, that it's too late for the American agriculture system, basically. It will take generations, like our great, great grandkids, before the genetically modified seeds are bred, or whatever you want to say, out of the food system. When that's not the word.
The ecosystem,
what's wrong with me?
Out of the ecosystem, out of the food supply. Well, I mean, if it's genetically modified, it's been designed to resist and to be resilient against. So, how are you going to? That's like creating a cyborg, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, like all things do, like all diseases and pathogens, and they eventually just something else overtakes them,
right.
You know? So hopefully it'll get run out of our food supply, and hopefully whatever it was that I read is not true.
Yeah. So. Yeah. There's a lot of information out there, and I think that most of the people can, you know, if you really want to do more research, just go Google this stuff, and it just gets more confusing as the more you read.
I suggest you don't.
Yeah. I would say just try to avoid it as much as you can, and don't buy
just vote with your wallet.
Yeah.
Vote with your wallet.
And most of your genetically modified foods, I guess, is predominantly in just packaged, right? A lot of packaging and packaged foods,
but no
fast
produce
food
now. I mean, the apples and papayas and pineapples, and you know, one of Monsanto's laboratories is over on, I think, on Molokai, near Maui, off the coast of Maui there. And people are so sad over there because they feel like all of their papaya, sugarcane, I don't even think they do sugarcane there anymore, papaya, pineapple,
wow.
All their crops, they believe that they are completely infested now. Like, you cannot get, no matter how, oh, you know, we forgot to talk about was that study with the wine, with the California wine, something like 100 non-organic and organic and biodynamic wines were tested in the state of California. And they all had glyphosate in them. All of them.
Really? I didn't hear about that.
Yeah. So it's in the table water. It's in the air. And so that's a sad story because I enjoy my organic wine, California wine, you know? And I just, It's just depressing. So stick to French wine and Italian wine.
And that's one of the reasons why I was just reading the French do not allow GMOs in their country because they don't want it to spoil their reputation of whole foods. And
they love food way too much. They do. They love food so much.
Genetically modified wine would kill that.
Food is life.
Food is life. Food is life. And we'll end on that.
Most highly pesticided crops are coffee, cotton, grapes.
I buy organic coffee.
Nuts, corn.
Corn's the big one. It's hard to, you can look in ingredients and just says, if it says corn meal, I always try to find like organic. And I try not to eat as much as I can, but.
We don't eat corn.
I like my cheese doodles once in a while, my weakness.
But you're what?
I was mumbling. I like cheese doodles once in a while. It's like my weakness. I go get cheese doodles.
What's that have to do with corn?
It's cornmeal. It's corn.
Dude.
What?
That's not food.
Yeah,
that's not food.
I know, but it's got the cheese on it. It's not food. I don't really
that's
do
not cheese. That's not corn
all
and
right.
That's not
cheese. I don't do it all the time.
I'm kidding.
Right.
What do I like? I like wine.
I like me wine.
I like margaritas. I like tostadas. Anyway.
All right.
Okay, now we're just rambling.
Yeah, we're rambling.
Okay, friends. Well, I want to thank everyone for really going out of their way to follow me on Instagram. Jeez, my Instagram is growing so fast. I'm posting so many videos and all kinds of cool stuff, including cats boxing with a dog's testicles. So please join me. It's fantastic. And thank you for joining the estrogen dominance support group. It is also growing, and I'm keeping up with it as best I can. And also the total gut makeover has been totally redone. And you should check it out. The Total Gut Makeover is a 6-week program where I help guide you through upregulating healthy digestion and cleaning out your cabinets and showing you meal plans and recipes and a little cookbook that you can follow. All that stuff. So lots going on.
At healthygutgirl.com, folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
We hate Monsanto.